Now we're going to turn to a lesser-known chapter of American history being literally unearthed in Londontown, Maryland. A number of young archaeologists are sharpening their trowels here. It's the largest archaeological dig site in the state. It sits on a bluff above the South River, which flows into the Chesapeake Bay some 3 miles away. There's not much left, just a large brick Georgian house and a few recreated buildings. A couple of hundred years ago, though, this was a thriving seaport. Goods arrived from all over Europe, especially England, and people came here too. For a number of English men and women, Londontown was where they first set foot in America. But many of these new arrivals from the mother country were not here by choice. Far from it.
They were called the King's Passengers, convicts, sent to the American colonies after the passage in 1718 of the Transportation Act.
Dr. Gregory Stiverson is president of the Historic Annapolis Foundation. We sit at a picnic table in the shade, not far from the dig. Australia, he says, was not the only colony where Britain sent her convicts. Under the Transportation Act, some 50 to 60,000 were sent to these shores, largely to Maryland and Virginia.
This was a brilliant piece of legislation on the part of the British Parliament to clean out the British jails 3 or 4 times a year, get rid of the problem of chronic crime and chronic recidivism by sending them over to the American colonies where labor was always needed and you would get them 3,000 miles away. Great idea, according to everyone except the American colonists, who didn't think this was such a great idea at all. Benjamin Franklin, in particular, waged quite a vocal campaign trying to get this law overturned. He equated Britain sending its felons to America with us packing up all the rattlesnakes in North America and sending them back to Britain and ask how they would like that if we set them loose in Hyde Park.
Would a tobacco planter buy these folks from the British government, and how much would they pay for them?
Once they got here in the colonies, they were sold at shipside or on shipboard by the captain of the ship, and basically he was able to convey to the purchaser a legal title to either 7 or 14 years of that person's labor.
Mm-hmm. And how much would someone go for?
Well, this was the really good deal as far as the Maryland planters were concerned. Indentured servants, and most people have heard of indentured servants, that's where you voluntarily commit yourself to come over to America for a period of usually 3 or 4 years. Indentured servants generally cost about 8 or 9 pounds for a female, about 10 pounds for a male, and anywhere from 15 to 35 pounds for a skilled male. Convict servants cost almost exactly the same for those same categories of people. So if you were willing to take a risk on a convict, you could get either 3 or 10 years additional labor by buying a convict for the same money that it would cost you for an indentured servant.
So they would be sold for a period of their term, 7 or 14 years. How were they treated? What were the conditions like?
Well, according to all accounts, the treatment of convict servants was very, very severe. Very often, it is said that they were treated worse than slaves, which, if you think about it, makes sense because a convict servant, indentured servants for that matter, were your bound labor for a term of years. A slave was yours for life, and so was the slave's progeny. So it just simply made economic sense to treat slaves relatively better than the convict servants. And particularly with the convicts, they were demonstrated felons. So there was it was considered entirely appropriate to treat them very harshly, to punish them very severely. The laws on the books were as severe here in Maryland as anywhere. If you ran away, they tacked 10 days for every day that you were gone from your master's service if you were a convict servant.
The William Brown House is the only remaining original structure on the grounds of Londontown. It was built in the 1760s by Mr. Brown, a carpenter and ferry operator who had at least 2 convict servants working for him. They're represented by mannequins placed inside the basement of the William Brown House, now a museum of sorts.
We're in the basement of the William Brown House, built in the 1760s. We have a woman sitting over here. Looks like she's had a very hard life, and in fact she had. She is based on a historical character that we know about because William Brown took her to court in 1764 after she'd had a second illegitimate child on his watch. Her name was Mary Jones, and he demanded that the court give him satisfaction for not only the time lost of her labor, but also for the additional expense and care that was going to be required of him to tend for these two little children that she had. The court demanded that she name the fathers. She did name the father of one, refused to name the father of the other child. The father she did name was a fellow convict servant, so there wasn't a thing he could get out of him.
What would have typically have happened to her or to other convict servants once their terms were up? Would they remain in this area? Would they go back to England?
That's a very good question and one that is very difficult to answer definitively. Thomas Jefferson in 1785, in his notes on the state of Virginia, talked about there only being about 2,000 convicts who'd ever come to Virginia. We know that is absolutely false. There were probably 20 or 30,000 that came to Virginia and somewhat more than that came to Maryland. Now, we have been able recently to find several descendants of convicts, so we do know that there were some who stayed who put down roots, who created the kind of legal records that allow us to trace their family trees today.
And that leads us very nicely to Carol Carmen, who has joined us in the basement of the Brown House. I understand that you're a descendant of one of those convicts.
Yes, I'm an amateur genealogist who, through help of a couple cousins, have discovered that I'm descended from one Thomas Flora of London, who stole a silk handkerchief worth 2 shillings and was transported to the colonies, presumably for the 7-year servitude.
Sounds like a pretty stiff sentence for the nature of that crime.
Yes, my friend who's a modern-day judge says now you'd get probation before judgment.
Now, I'm just wondering, what was your reaction when you discovered your ancestor?
I was very thrilled. I don't mind that my ancestor was a convict. I think he proved himself. He moved on and left descendants that today we wouldn't be here without him.
Do you know, was he sent to this area in Maryland?
He was sent to Annapolis. I don't know if he ever was in London town, but there are records of him getting in a little minor trouble in 1734 in Anne Arundel County for failure to burn his tobacco, which was something that they were required to do and he didn't go along with.
And so he spent the rest of his time here as a gentleman farmer, presumably?
Presumably he did somewhat better once he served out his indenture and did move on and became a landowner.
Married?
And married. We know nothing about his wife. He did have several children, we think at least 8 sons, several of whom served in the Revolutionary War. He probably had daughters, but daughters are a little harder to trace. Each subsequent generation moved west to better themselves, ending up in Michigan, and then I moved back and wiped out all the progress by moving back to Annapolis where it all started.
Did you have any idea at the time you moved back to Annapolis?
I had no idea.
That your forebears were from here?
Huh? I had no idea that I had any ancestry in Maryland at all.
And one footnote to our story. A few days after our chat, Carol Carmen came across a book of land records in Maryland, and sure enough, it turns out her ancestor Thomas Flora did pass through London town. Carol says it may be her ancestor is channeling his history through her. For photos, go to npr.org. Our visit to London Town, Maryland was produced by Devar Ardalan and recorded by Greg Gavin. Petra Mayer directed tonight's broadcast. Martha Wexler is the senior editor. Walter Ray Watson produces the program with Susan Stone, Tracy Wall, Tina Tennyson, and Rebecca Ekpe. Our technical director is Neil Ellis, with engineers Peter Alina, Chris Nelson, and Sherry Marshevsky. Key Molesky is our reference librarian. Diane Scholar is the newscast producer. That's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Brian Naylor.